The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before this week's episode, I wanted to take a moment to let y'all know about the devastating floods happening in Pakistan right now. Over 30 million people have been affected, with the death toll around 1,100 and rising with every passing day. Entire buildings are being washed away, with many people sustaining injuries. I encourage every listener to donate any amount they can to help alleviate this disaster. You can find a list of organizations to send funds to linked in the show notes. Warning, the following episode contains stories of rape and extreme violence.
You know, slowly but surely from the 1990s, it was entering my conscious, my public and social conscious, that partition of India was a very big event that really shaped the South Asian geopolitics and also people. It lives in families. It lives in families' histories. I was slowly understanding my inheritance. Like, this is what I inherit, you know, as an Indian woman. This is part of my cultural and familial inheritance.
Once we make the association that the past isn't meant to stay in the past, what can we do to make sure the memories and experiences of people who came before us don't get lost in the void? Last week, you heard some of the ways women were weaponized during partition from Manjula Waldron, a survivor who wrote a novel to process her personal trauma from 1947. This week, we're going to focus on what we can do now to acknowledge these women, to make sure their experiences don't get lost, no matter how much time has passed. From iHeartRadio, I'm Neha Aziz, and this is Partition, a podcast that will take a closer look into this often forgotten part of history. I can't quite remember how I stumbled upon this artist's work. I think I was just looking for people who were sharing stories about partition in any capacity. Once I looked at her photos, I immediately knew I wanted to talk to her and find out more about her intricate and honest works about partition.
I call myself a post-colonial feminist artist.
That's Prithika Chaudhary.
I make art installations that are anti-memorials to traumatic geopolitical events such as the partition of India, 9/11, and so on. in these anti-memorials, I tried to excavate the counter-memories of these events, the counter-histories of these events.
Prithika is an artist, curator, and writer who focuses on anti-memorials and counter-memory. Though I hadn't heard these terms before, I immediately understood their meaning as she explained them to me. In essence, they are the crux of this podcast.
So an anti-memorial basically goes against the grain in terms of traditional monuments, which are, you know, state-sponsored monuments tend to be rather large brick-and-mortar structures that glorify the nation state in some way. Anti-memorials do the almost the opposite. So they are usually smaller in scale. They are usually temporary. They are made usually of fragile and precarious materials. And most of the time, they critique the nation state.
There are, of course, statues and other entities named after Jinnah and Nehru in Pakistan and India. And while there are still some statues devoted to our colonizers, they are not well preserved, and many are in the process of being removed, a notion similar to Confederate statues being removed in the United States.
Counter memories, similarly, are memories that center the experiences of people that don't get to write history. So the national version, the nationalist hero version, so to speak, of a traumatic event is usually quite different from what was experienced on the ground by people that were at a disadvantage. In the context of the partition of India, these tend to be women and the Muslim minority. These two groups also don't get to write the history of the partition to any great extent. They are usually very silenced. Their experiences are not heard. They are definitely not centered.
Coming to terms with our past is essential. We must own up to our history, no matter how despicable it may be. Think about reparations being made to the descendants of slaves. While no amount of money can erase the wickedness of the past, at the very least, it offers some accountability. You've heard me say time and time again that the great men in history narrative is the one that gets the limelight in most cases, and everyday people, especially women, get shafted. The everyday people are the ones that lost their homes, were separated from their relatives, attacked, and must truly live with the consequences from these so-called great men. This is where the counter-memory comes in.
So counter-memory is an exercise, it's an individual act of resistance, it's a Foucauldian term, to excavate intentionally these histories that have been lost, that have been erased from nationalist narratives, and then to center those.
Prithika mentions that a counter-memory is a Foucauldian term. The term was coined by French philosopher Michel Foucault. Counter-memories hope to break the cycle of sharing a sugar-coated history and questioning the power structure of information that is widely available to us. Essentially, it is through counter-memories where we get the so-called inconvenient truths, the truths we don't get in history books, the truths that are vastly different from the fantasies they are dressed up as. No matter how Indians and Pakistanis fall into the timeline of events, we all have a partition story. I asked Prithika what hers was.
I am half Sindhi and half Bengali.
Prithika is referring to two different regions. Sindh is a province in Pakistan, where I'm also from, and Bengal is a region on the eastern side of India, which you may remember was split by Cyril Radcliffe.
In the height of the 1947 partition riots, my grandparents and their extended family migrated from Karachi to Delhi. You know, our family doesn't talk about this. Like, I had to really extracted out of my mother. And she was initially quite resistant to talking about it because she was like, well, what's the point of talking about all this, you know, past traumas and things like that? It's just better to just forget.
Extract is the perfect word. To liken her recollection of getting information from her mom to getting a procedure as unpleasant as getting a tooth removed is flawless.
The partition lives, very much lives, and functions as a force, as a ghost, or however you want to call it, in the current geopolitics of South Asia. That was what led me to sort of question my mother about what exactly happened in 1947. What does she know? So she was only, I believe, 3 years old at the time. So she doesn't really remember, but she knew enough that she was able to fill me in on quite a few details over the course of several telephone calls, because I was in the U.S. by then.
Over the course of those many international telephone calls, Prithika slowly uncovered the horror stories her family witnessed during partition.
I found out that my grandfather's extended family, like his brothers and sisters and them, they all migrated, but they migrated at slightly different times and at slightly different, all within August of 1947, but through different modes, like, you know, train or car or whatever they were able to manage. And my grandfather was in a pretty decent position in the Indian Railways. He was even able to get like an air ticket for a part of that journey. But the entire family, the extended family, was not that lucky. And there were one whole part of their family, like one of his siblings and their entire family, was completely like killed in the trains that, you know, when they were coming to India. Only one nephew of my grandfather survived, and he had like some 16 stab wounds. His other sibling, sister, her daughter, one of her daughters, was abducted and lost. They were never able to find her.
Everybody, welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I never thought I'd take my three young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery. But that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which has morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Prithika mostly found out about partition through film and television, and when she started pursuing her MFA, all the pieces came together for her.
When I came to the U.S., after a few years, you know, I went back to school. I started doing the grad program at UW-Madison, an MFA, and there I had the opportunity to attend a graduate seminar on cultural memory, and there I finally found like a framework to really examine and analyze cultural memory in all its different nuances. So there is the hegemonic narratives, there is the erased narratives, and that's where I started to understand these concepts of counter-memories, counter-histories, subaltern resistance to these anti-memorials or, you know, anti-monuments, or however, you know, people use like different terms here. But this is where I started to kind of gain a vocabulary to process and then to sort of understand how I can make art about it.
Soon my conversation with Prithika switched gears to a more complicated and disheartening topic. Genocidal rape is a concept I have a hard time wrapping my head around. Rape in general is a concept I have a hard time wrapping my head around. Activist and researcher Rahima Begum writes, United Nations Security Council Resolution 1820 states that sexual violence is a tactic of war to humiliate, dominate, instill fear in, disperse, and or forcibly relocate civilian members of a community or an ethnic group. Throughout time, we have seen sexual violence, especially in the form of rape, being used to demoralize and destabilize entire communities, destroying the structure of families and societies. In spaces of conflict, we can't assume sexual violence is inevitable. When village elders are raped in public, sons are forced to rape their mother, or soldiers rape women in a village with their brothers and husbands forced to watch. These acts are strategic and efforts to annihilate an entire community. The use of the word tactic is just very upsetting. To think of rape as a strategy, or to chalk it up to a necessary evil of war, is as detestable as it is outrageous.
So partition is a very complex thing. It's a very complex geopolitical event. There are many aspects of it, you know.
She created her first partition-related work in 2007 while in grad school.
That one was called Queering Mother India. So in that, I wanted to understand how this construct of Mother India had maybe enabled the perverse logic of using rape as a weapon in communal rights, where, you know, the body of the women of a community can become the symbolic battleground, where if you, you know, violate the women's bodies, you can inflict a very deep wound and humiliation to the men of that community. So it's very much a battle amongst men, but it gets played out on the bodies of women. That's the perverse logic of using rape as a weapon, especially in these patriarchal societies.
Punishing women was not a one-off aspect of partition, but one that has been perpetrated in other historical events like Bosnia and Rwanda. But back to South Asia.
Culturally, we really revere women too. I mean, we have goddesses that we worship. So I could not quite understand this complete contradiction of, you know, on the one hand, we worship goddesses, but then on the other hand, we violate women's bodies brutally, you know. So that was the whole idea of that anti-memorial, where it comprised of, you know, about a 9 or 10 foot tall woman that I had made in ceramic, in clay, and it was fragmented. So, you know, her body was in fragments around the gallery. And this is to sort of allude to how women's bodies were dismembered, you know, as part of the symbolic violence in the partition riots.
Brithika shows the female body as the mutilated and brutalized body of Mother India. When outside the traditional depictions of Mother India as a serene, demure, maternal figure who reproduces the nation as expected of her, the icon of Mother India itself becomes broken by communal violence. As she discusses more of her installations, Prithika mentioned many of them are named after books or films that she was inspired by.
So the second anti-memorial, I titled it What the Body Remembers because, you know, as an intertextual citation to the novel. And in that, I focused only on the lower halves of women's bodies, and they are also twice life size. So it's just the lower half of the female body, but each one of them is about 6 feet tall.
Due to the large nature of these pieces, she notes that the belly and pubic areas are at eye level, making a statement one can't easily ignore.
And they are engaged in schoolyard games, like playing hopscotch or jump rope or being on a swing. And then there is like a soundscape in there where it's the sound of, you know, an old-time steam engine sort of approaching and then leaving, and that it just plays on a loop. So it's this sort of this ominous sound of a train coming and then leaving.
Unfortunately, the pieces and what the body remembers suffered irreparable damage while being transported, but photos of the art can be seen on Prithika's website. However, she has a solution to bring them back to life by recreating them as digital 3D models and releasing them as NFTs. A statement I never thought I would say on this show. If you don't know what an NFT is, I assure you I am the worst person to explain it.
The next one that I made after What the Body Remembers was Silent Waters, which is an intertextual citation to a film by Sabiha Sumer, Kamosh Pani, in which she sort of narrates the life story of a woman who was abducted and raped and then eventually ended up marrying one of her rapists as a form of survival. And of course, those memories haunt her, but there's this sort of culture of silence in the village where she lives where nobody mentions it and she doesn't mention it, and that her survival is sort of conditional to that. But eventually one of her brothers finds her, because they never stop looking for her. He comes from India and he finds her, which then breaks the silence of her abduction and rape.
Kamosh Pani came out in 2003, and I'll discuss this film further in a later episode.
In this installation titled Silent Waters, I created 101 feet, and these are also larger than life, so they are like 15, 16 inches long, which is bigger than most human feet. They are glazed black, jet black, and when I display them, I fill them to different heights with salt water. So during the exhibition, the water evaporates and leaves like a crystalline residue of the salt in the feet. There's also a soundscape in there where, you know, it's the sound of running feet, rainfall, and then a body hitting water. So like somebody maybe jumped into a well.
Some of Prithika's other installations that focus on partition include Remembering the Crooked Line, which uses games as a motif, like in What the Body Remembers, and displays separations of other countries. In Broken Column, a series of hanging latex and silicone casts printed with neutral-colored bricks and stones hang dispersed in a gallery. These casts represent the monuments to partition that should exist in the affected countries, but they don't, except for the monument representing the 1971 Liberation War. In this war, Bengalis living in East Pakistan fought for their independence, eventually emerging victorious as a new country, Bangladesh. This war was one of the many traumatic and violent events that stemmed from partition. It is a story that deserves its own time, research, and respect. It is my hope to share some of those stories in the future. And in Memory Leaks, Traces and Drips, Prithika uses dripping water to express the regularity of communal riots. So, what can we do now? I asked Prithika this question, and I'll be the first to admit it was pretty loaded. How do we pay tribute to women affected by partition? How do we honor them?
Yeah, that is a big question. You know, because rape is still stigmatized, right? Rape is a stigma that is still largely carried by women, right? It's hard to center these narratives of rape. Because, again, remember the victims of rape, right? Their survival after the rape, in a lot of situations, depends on their silence. Like, it's not of benefit to them to break their silence, right? So up until, as a society, women carry the stigma of rape, and women's silence about their rapes is what is valued rather than the redressal of the wrong, I think it would be very hard to reverse that trend, you know, in any significant way. So I guess what we can do, people like you and me, you know, creatives who are not directly impacted by the rapes, but, you know, as researchers and as creatives, we can research it and preserve those memories in a way, in different cultural artifacts, you know, art, podcasts, books, historiography, you know, however we are able, films.
Prithika's work has been on display in a plethora of museums around the world. As the senior curator for the South Asia Institute of Chicago, she's putting together a 75th anniversary project where many of her works will be showcased. The exhibit is aptly titled Unbearable Memories, Unspeakable Histories. At the top of the episode, you heard Prithika say that partition lives in families, and this history is something she inherits. I had shared many of the same sentiments in an earlier episode. Partition is a living and breathing thing. I, too, believe it is my legacy to share these stories and ensure they don't get lost. Perhaps the most important aspect of Prithika's work is that it can be seen online, thus eliminating any barriers. It doesn't matter what side of the border you belong to or whether partition is a part of your story or not. The accessibility of Prithika's work allows everyone, no matter where you are or who you are, to take the first step towards learning about this history that would otherwise be forgotten. In episode 1, you heard me mention that there are no partition memorials in either India or Pakistan. What is being done to preserve this history? There are a number of people and organizations recording and documenting survivor accounts, and I was lucky enough to talk to some of them and discuss the task of collecting memories.
I sort of casually started recording stories on a trip to Punjab in 2009. People thought it was insane, like really strange what I was doing. People who had witnessed it started to line up, and it was like, oh, there's a need. Like, people want to tell the story.
Until next week, I'm Neha Aziz, and this is Partition. Partition was developed as a part of the Next Up initiative created by Anna Hosnier, Joelle Monique, and Yesenia Median. Partition is produced by Anna Hosnier, Trisha Mukherjee, and Becca Ramos. It is edited by Rory Gagan, with original score composed by Mark Hadley.
Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.